When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone. I'm Talia.
And I'm Tanya.
And together we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Talia.
How's it going? I already know we've bitched
yeah,
to each other.
Yeah, we've already complained, so. Today was the air my grievances day.
And it went on for a while. Mm-hmm. But we're ready, right?
Absolutely.
So I'm going to play you a clip of a tape that was found in a serial killer's basement. And this episode is very gruesome and graphic. Are you ready?
Yes.
This is first kill number one. First kill was 19 years old.
First kill was nice.
That's awful.
So we're going to talk about first kill. It was a cold March evening in 2001 when 19-year-old Cassandra Walker found herself hustling the streets of St. Louis looking for a John to pay her for her services so she could get her next fix of crack. She'd already had a hard life and fell victim to the drug's addictive control. After only a few minutes, a man in this new black Mitsubishi Eclipse approached her, looking for sex. The man was in his mid-20s. He was well-dressed, well-groomed, and very articulate. Cassandra wasn't at all worried about getting into his car, but she should have been, because she had no idea she would be the first victim of this burgeoning serial killer. The man said his name was Toby, and he suggested that they go to his house in Ferguson, Missouri, where they could smoke some crack together and have sex. Although on the outside, Toby seemed like a clean-cut man, in reality, he had just been released from prison only 3 days earlier for a parole violation. Toby, like Cassandra, had been plagued with addiction. Years earlier, he was a college student at Morris Brown College in Atlanta, but he got hooked on crack and coke, and it created a $300 a day habit.
Wow.
He dropped out of college and he started robbing shoe stores for his addiction. I don't know why shoe stores were his particular place to go, but in 1997, he got caught. He ended up serving 5 years in the Farmington Correctional Center for these armed robberies. After he was released on parole, he tested dirty, so he went back to prison. And when he got released, 3 days later, he met Cassandra. Cassandra sat in the passenger seat of the Mitsubishi as Toby drove to his ranch-style house at 1001 Ford Drive in the middle-class suburban neighborhood of Ferguson. The Ford Drive house was bought by Toby's mom after she divorced his father when he was about maybe 10 years old. But at this point, only Toby lived in it. His mother had another house in Alton, Missouri. When Cassandra walked inside, she couldn't help but notice the first level was immaculate, like something out of Better Homes and Garden magazine. It was spotless. And in the beginning, Toby was very charming. His cat came out of hiding, and he spent a few minutes petting her. Just a nice guy. Gonna smoke crack and have sex with her. Then he led Cassandra into the back bedroom of the house, which was on the first level. And together, they took turns smoking crack. But after smoking crack, something changed with Toby. His personality turned sort of dark. He convinced Cassandra that he was into some weird things. He had her put on a pair of white underwear and a white t-shirt that he had, and sunglasses. I mean, for money, she didn't question it. But then he started getting really bossy. His tone became more angry and aggressive, and he commanded her to walk back into the living room. While in the living room, he set up a tripod with a video camera. He ordered Cassandra to turn around and not look at him. But she does turn around, and when she does, he yells at her. He grabs her hands, puts them behind her back, and he handcuffs her. Then he shuts off the video recorder. He takes Cassandra and the video equipment down into his basement. And this basement is more like a torture chamber. At first glance, it looks like any other finished basement. There's beige carpeting and dark wood paneling walls. But a closer look reveals a more sinister side to it. Cassandra is stripped and sexually tortured for hours. Then Toby sets the tripod and the camera back up. Cassandra's nude. Her hands are cuffed behind her back. She has leg irons on, attached to a chain, which is attached to the handcuffs. She's forced to get down on her knees and perform oral sex on him. All the while, he's punching her, he's smacking her, he's insulting her and degrading her, calling her a whore. After Toby climaxes, he puts this duct tape over her eyes and mouth, and he pushes her backwards. She's so weak from the beating that she falls to the ground. Toby leaves the room to get something, and then he reappears on the video a few seconds later with a leather belt. He puts the belt through the belt buckle and places it around Cassandra's neck. He then pulls on the belt so hard the buckle breaks. He releases the pressure, and Cassandra is revived for the moment. But then Toby pulls on the belt again. Then he releases it. This game went on for 20 minutes. Eventually, Cassandra lost consciousness, and Toby strangled her to death. Toby stands in front of the camera, and he says, "First kill. Name, I don't give a fuck. First kill was nice." And here's a clip.
"This is first kill, number one. First kill was 19 years old. First kill was nice."
Cassandra was no more than a piece of trash, a whore to Toby. And for now, the urge to kill, which had consumed Toby since he was 14 years old, was satisfied. Later that night, Toby carried Cassandra Walker's corpse to his car, and he drove her to a desolate area off of Highway 64, which is just past the Mississippi River and into the state of Illinois. Her body was found 2 weeks later, but there were no leads to her killer. It only took a few weeks before Toby's lust for murder overpowered him again, and he was driven to find his next kill. In the spring of 2001, 34-year-old Alicia Greenway was down on her luck. She was a mother of two who found herself addicted to crack and selling her body to feed the habit. In March of that year, she had just gotten released from prison and was back out on the streets of East St. Louis hustling. She often stayed at the home of Reverend Inuka Wanguzi, who opened her house to society's throwaways as part of a community outreach program. Alicia didn't want to be the way she was, but she couldn't figure out how to beat this addiction. On April 1st, Alicia walks the streets of St. Louis, as I said, looking to score some crack. Later that night, the Reverend was awakened to the sound of her phone ringing. It was Alicia, and she seemed very animated and excited. She explained that she was at the home of a man she met that night and wanted the Reverend to speak with him. The man got on the phone, and the Reverend said to him, quote, "You got my girl over there?" End quote. He replied, "Yes, but you don't have to worry about her tonight because she's with me and she's safe." Of course, Alicia was far from safe. She was in Toby's lair, and he was getting ready to brutally torture her. While being videotaped, Alicia was stripped naked and forced to wear a military cold weather pile cap on her head. Do you know what that is?
No.
It's one of those winter hats that covers your ears and it's got a strap around the chin. It's a military hat. Toby had served 2 years as an Army Reserve, so it's likely that's where he got the cap from. And why she was forced to wear it, we'll never know. A cloth was tied over her eyes, and in the video, she was kneeling on the floor facing Toby, who was sitting on the black leather couch in the basement. He forced her to perform oral sex on him, all the while berating her and calling her a whore. Then he gets up from the couch and he's holding what appears to be a stun gun in his hands. And he stops the video. Alicia's moved to a bedroom in the basement and she's forced to lay on her stomach. Toby ties her hands to the headboard and he starts the video again. He anally rapes her and filmed close-ups of him fondling Alicia's private parts. He leaves the basement bedroom for a few seconds, and he comes back with a Corona beer bottle, which he uses to rape her. As he's raping her with the bottle, he demands that she say, "You're my master, and it pleases me to serve you." And this is really hard to hear, but here's a clip.
I can't hear you what you're saying. Say it clear.
"You are the master. It pleases me to serve you. You are the master. It pleases me to serve you.
Stop for.
You are the master. It pleases me to serve you."
Later in the video, he says, quote, "You know I'm going to kill your sorry ass. You know you're in trouble, don't you?" Then he makes her apologize to him, telling her to say it, like I said, bitch. He asks her if she has any children, and when she tells him she does, here's what he says.
"You sorry?"
"Yes."
"You sorry about what?"
"Everything."
"Jumping in the car with a motherfucker you don't know?"
"Yes."
"You sorry?"
"Yeah."
"Uh-huh." "You want to say something to your kids?"
"Mom, sorry."
"Who raising your kids?"
"Me and my mama, Dad."
"You ain't raising. She on her in your back smoking crack. Journey going home, Mom. I'm going to keep you about a week."
The videotape temporarily stops. When it starts back up, Toby is putting a chain around Alicia's neck. He begins choking her and says, quote, "Shut up, bitch. I'm not done with you yet." After a few minutes, on the video, you can see Alicia is dead. Alicia's body was later dumped on the road, and before Toby left her, as a final act of humiliation and control, he ran over her body with his blue Chevy Cavalier, because he has two cars. Alicia's remains were found only 9 hours after she made that phone call to the Reverend. And as with Cassandra Walker, there were no clues as to who killed her. Only a few days after Alicia's death, Toby found his next victim. It was a 44-year-old sex worker named Barbara Sparks. As with the other two women, she was brought to his house, sadistically tortured, beaten and strangled, and then dumped in a desolate area. She was found 3 hours later by some people walking. They came across Barbara's naked body.
What, you just dump them like in a public area?
Yeah, they're on like in a bad area on a street with, okay, from what I can gather, a lot of abandoned houses.
Okay.
At first, she looked dead, but as they approached her, they realized she was still breathing. She was rushed to the hospital, and doctors were actually able to save her. But due to the extreme violence inflicted upon her, She had severe brain damage, and she was never able to help authorities find her attacker. In fact, Barbara became a ward of the state of Illinois, and she is currently in a facility receiving 24-hour care.
Oh, that's terrible.
She never recovered from the brain injury. Semen was found inside her, so investigators were able to get a DNA profile, but they had no one to compare it with at the time. And later you'll hear that Barbara wasn't the only one to survive an attack from Toby. Toby's lust for violence and death continued to grow. And on May 15th in 2001, he was desperate for another victim. He cruised what's called the Stroll area of North Broadway in St. Louis. The Stroll got its name because it's an area where girls stroll back and forth looking to trade sex for money and drugs. That's where he met 36-year-old Teresa Wilson. Teresa was originally from Louisiana, and at the age of 17, she found out she was pregnant and she quit school. She gave birth to a girl she named Chastity, and in the beginning, she was a very devoted single mother, determined to give her daughter a good life. She got a job and she supported Chastity on her own. But then she got hooked on crack. At some point, her and Chastity moved to St. Louis, and she was hustling the streets. She would bring Chastity with her, and there was a bench that Teresa would sit on with Chastity. And when a John approached, Teresa would get in the car. She'd tell Chastity to stay on the bench, and she'd be gone a few minutes, and then she'd come back. Of course, Chastity got taken away from Teresa. And right before Christmas in 2000, so it's a few months earlier, Teresa entered a rehab program. And she got clean after a few months. But within weeks of getting out, she was back to her old habits of using crack and walking the Stroll, which is where she met Toby. Toby took her back to his Ford drive home, and they smoked some crack. It didn't take long for Toby to begin abusing her and videotaping it. In nothing but her underwear, he bound Teresa's hands with duct tape, put tape over her eyes, and grabbed her by her feet, dragging her down the steps that led to the basement. Her head bounced off all 13 steps. And we know this because Toby had a camera set up. According to the videotape, while in the basement, Toby wrapped a belt around Teresa's neck and he choked her for a while, releasing it, letting her regain consciousness, the same thing he did with the other people. Then he asks her, "Who's your daddy?" And she replies, "You're my master. You're my master. I'm to do whatever it is that pleases you." And this is going to get really graphic.
Oh, man.
Don't act like you don't want to hear it. He takes a toilet plunger, and it's got a wooden handle, and he beats her with it. Then he violently rapes her with a plunger, stomping the wooden end so it splits in half. Half the plunger remains inside her while he's holding the remaining broken piece in one hand and a video camera in the other. He records himself shoving the broken handle inside her so hard it penetrates her colon and lower abdomen.
Oh, are you kidding me?
She lays there in agony as he videotapes the painful and humiliating death of her.
Oh, that's awful.
I know. It's so bad. It's so bad.
He's just escalating.
He is. Once she's dead, Toby puts her body in the trunk of a Chevrolet Cavalier, and he dumps her in a ditch near the Missouri River in St. Charles County. 5 days later, a highway grass mowing crew found her nude and decaying corpse there. She was identified by a dental plate found in her mouth.
Dang.
The next woman to be tortured while videotaped in Toby's basement was 46-year-old Betty James. In the basement, which by this time smelled of a mixture of death, fecal matter, vomit and piss, she was bound, tortured, beaten, and raped. A belt was tied around her neck, and then Toby played that release-pull game again.
You know, that reminds me of the Happy Face Killer.
Yes, I was thinking the same thing.
I think that was episode 13.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he did that shit.
Drool and phlegm can be seen in the video coming out of Betty's mouth, and Betty's legs began twitching.
Oh.
When the twitching stopped, Toby stopped because he knew she was dead. A while later, Toby dumped her nude body in the alleyway of Kennery Street in St. Louis County, which is only a couple blocks away from his mother, her name is Sandra, her house. Again, as a final act of control and degradation, he ran over her legs and left the scene. Afterwards, he went home and changed for work.
Oh my God, he had a job?
Yeah, he was employed as a server. Are you ready for this?
No.
At a very successful fine dining restaurant inside a hotel in Chesterfield, Missouri.
Seriously?
A fine dining restaurant.
Wow.
He was very articulate. When Betty James's body was later discovered, the police were able to get photos of the distinct tire tread marks on her legs. And they could tell from the scene that she'd obviously been murdered elsewhere. Autopsy showed adhesive remnants, probably from duct tape, on her wrist, arms, and eyes. But again, they had nobody to link any of the evidence to.
He was in prison. Didn't they have a DNA? This is before they did that.
It was 2002 that they started doing that.
Oh, man. Okay.
More and more sex workers from the Stroll area started turning up missing and or dead. 26-year-old Verona Thompson, who went by Ronnie, she went missing on June 23rd, and her nude body was found 6 days later in a ditch, only 16 feet from where Teresa Wilson's body was found. When I say ditch, Verona and Teresa were out in the country in a ditch, in a farming community, so they weren't on any alleyway or anything.
It took days to find them, so that kind of makes sense if they were out in the middle of just fields and whatever.
And it's summer and it's
oh, hot. Man.
On July 30th, 61-year-old Mary Shields' nude body was found in the weeds near an abandoned building in East St. Louis. She'd been raped and strangled, and she too was a crack addict and probably a sex worker, though I can't verify that, I'm assuming. Though it's kind of old, but I mean, I'm not judging.
Poor thing.
Obviously, yeah.
She had a rough life.
Yes, I'm guessing. Then 50-year-old Yvonne Cruz, she was last seen August 24th. Her nude body was found the very next day after she went missing in the weeds of a ditch. A medical autopsy determined she'd been strangled, and DNA from semen found inside her matched the surviving victim, Barbara Sparks. So they were able to connect the semen from inside Barbara Sparks to the semen inside Yvonne Cruz via DNA. 6 weeks later, a man was walking to catch the metro train in East St. Louis when he stumbled upon 33-year-old Brenda Beasley's body. She was found next to a fire hydrant surrounded by trash. I'm assuming, again, this is one of those desolate streets because they described weeds being all around the fire hydrant, which leads me to believe it's not well kept up and trash all over. The mother of three had ligature marks on her wrists and her ankles, and she was nude, except there was a pair of jeans that were pulled down around her ankles. Brenda was last seen the night before working the Stroll. Her cause of death wasn't strangulation. It was determined to be a blow to her head. And she, too, had DNA from semen found inside of her that matched Yvonne Cruz and Barbara Sparks. By the fall of 2001, the St. Louis Police Department knew they were dealing with a serial killer that was targeting drug addicts and sex workers. A task force was assembled with 30 officers, analysts, and lab techs from St. Clair County, St. Charles County, all over, including the FBI. They were called the Bi-State Strangler Task Force. FBI criminal profilers created a profile of their suspect. They determined he was an African-American male with an above-average IQ. They said he was employed at a job that required repetitive work, such as a factory worker or someone in the food service industry. They believed he lived in the area, had a criminal history, and would continue killing until he got caught. I could have told you that. But for months, there were no more missing women or new bodies found that could be attributed to the serial killer. Police suspected he was either dead, moved away, or was incarcerated. And they were correct on one of the points. Toby violated his parole by testing dirty in November, and he got put in jail for 5 months.
I find it ironic that he's targeting people that are drug addicts, but he also takes drugs.
He just needs to kill.
Obviously.
Then on January 30th, 2002, while Toby's locked up, the skeletal remains of an African-American woman were found in Muskota, Illinois. She was wearing a black velour sleeveless catsuit. See, I didn't know what a catsuit was.
Oh, I know what a catsuit is.
I did not. It is a tight one-piece outfit. This one had pant legs to it. Like Catwoman, mm-hmm. kind of.
But sleeveless.
But sleeveless, yes. Her right ear had three piercings, and she had two rings on her middle finger. They estimated she'd been dead for up to a year, and she was between 20 and 40 years old. This woman had clearly suffered in her life, as evidenced by, you ready for this? Healed fractures of her nose, ribs, wrists, lower neck, and left ankle.
Wow.
So either she was in a car accident or she was abused. Eventually, authorities were able to link her as a woman in one of Toby's snuff videos. However, to this day, her identity is still unknown.
Oh, I hate when their identities aren't known. It's just so sad to me.
I know, it bothers me too. And there's a sketch of her on our website, TNT Crimes, and more information that you can read about because somebody knows her. Then on March 11th, more skeletal remains were found in nearby Madison County, Illinois. They were again an African-American woman. She was believed to be between 23 and 40, which I thought was interesting.
23.
23 and not 22. She was wearing gray shorts and a man's extra large Tommy Hilfiger flannel shirt. Given the amount of decomposition, the coroner estimated she'd been dead for about 4 to 6 months. And to this day, her remains are unidentified. She is known as Skeletal Remains Number 2.
Oh.
Or Madison County Jane Doe. March 28th, another body was found, known as Skeletal Remains Number 3, in Monroe County, Illinois. The medical examiner determined she was 5'1", African-American, between the ages of 33 and 50. Her cause of death was ruled homicide. I don't know how they were able to rule that because the other ones weren't. When she was found, she was wearing khaki shorts and a green shirt with the word Mavericks in orange printed on it. Like the other two Jane Does, police would later link her to Toby through the torture tapes. However, her identity is still unknown. As time went on, the police were no closer to catching the Bi-State Strangler. And after serving only 4 months, Toby was released from prison in March of 2002. On Sunday, May 19th, a writer for the Post-Dispatch in St. Louis, his name was Bill Smith, he wrote a compassionate article on Teresa Wilson. He wanted to humanize her in the eyes of the public, showing she was more than just a drug addict and a sex worker. Toby read the article. Because he was a huge fan of his work, he cut out every article he could find about the crimes. When he read the piece on Teresa, he was beside himself. He had to respond. He put gloves on, grabbed a piece of stationery that had gardening tools as a design on it.
What?
I don't know. I don't know why he had that. I don't know. He got a red pen and he wrote the following. And it's in very nice handwriting, by the way, I must add. Quote, "Dear Bill, nice sob story about Teresa Wilson. Write one about Alicia Greenway. Write a good one, and I'll tell you where many others are. To prove I'm real, here are the directions to victim number 17. Search within a 50-yard radius from the X. Put the story in the Sunday paper like the last." End quote. Toby also went to Expedia.com and he printed out a map of St. Charles County and he placed an X on the spot where victim number 17's body could be found. He thought he was being clever by cutting off the bottom of the paper that had like the internet information on it. He put the map and the letter into a self-sealing envelope. The return address said, "I thraldom." Do you know what thraldom means?
Mm-mm.
Thraldom means having control over a slave or object.
Wow.
He gave some other bullshit address below it in New York, New York. Thraldom is also the name of a website on the dark web. On that website, they discuss and share ideas on stories of severe, non-consensual BDSM. And Toby loved that website. When Toby was done, he got into his Mitsubishi and he went to the Stroll on North Broadway. There he approached a sex worker who went by the name Sweet Pea. She got into his car and she was never seen again. And before I go on, we're going to take a quick break.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we're back. Imagine the reporter Bill Smith's surprise when he received a letter a few days later.
Oh, I would have just been beside myself.
He contacted the police and they immediately went to the X on the map. It was just off an old hiking trail near a farming community. The area was littered with old appliances, broken furniture, trash, and it was surrounded by heavy brush. Within 10 minutes, they found a skull. A few yards away, they found more bones and a decomposed torso. There was no clothing found anywhere near the body. And where the body was found is the same place where a year earlier, the bodies of Teresa Wilson and Verona Thompson were found. The body was originally called Skeletal Remains Number 4, but that will later change. FBI profilers recommended that Bill Smith do a follow-up article, as Toby's letter had requested. So a week later, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch did a story on all the murders. And then the very next day, they released another story discussing the discovery of Skeletal Remains Number 4. Meanwhile, the St. Louis, Missouri Police Department, along with some Illinois State Police special agents, were given the task of figuring out how to find the killer through the printed map. They went to every website they could think of to try to match the icons on the map with that particular website. Their tedious research paid off, and they were able to match the icons to Expedia.com. And I'm not going to go into all of it, but investigators subpoena Microsoft and a company called UUNT Technologies, requesting data files, graphic files, log files, user account files, IP addresses, and user IDs. Anybody who had typed in that map coordinate between May 18th and May 21st. The results indicated there was just one, and his name was Maury Troy Travis, but he went by Toby. He lived at 1001 Ford Drive in Ferguson, Missouri. Background records show that Travis's mother, Sandra, lived not far from where three bodies were found in Alton, Illinois. On the morning of June 6, the task force got a search warrant for Toby's house and his two cars, and they knocked on his door at 7 a.m. Toby got up, he answered the door, and he started scowling. You know what he yelled out?
What?
What the fuck do you want?
Oh, nice.
Because that's what you do when the police are at
yes.
your door. Detectives entered the living room, and they sat down to talk to him while some other very unfortunate people had to search his house. In his bedroom was a woman named Kim Williams. It was Toby's neighbor that he'd actually grown up with and his new girlfriend. Lucky lady.
Oh, man, she got a catch.
Stop. She was laying on his bed. Officers told Toby when they were sitting down talking how they traced the map to his user account. And he responded by saying, quote, that fucking computer, end quote. Then, this is really interesting. They showed him photos of the victims that had been recovered and identified. They were just photos they'd collected of them, and he asked them if he knew the women. He responded by saying, quote, nah, don't know any of them hoes.
Oh, nice.
But then he slipped up. He gave the photos back to the police, and then he said, quote, "Let me see them dead bitches again."
Dead bitches.
Dead bitches. Realizing his mistake, he mumbled, quote, "I'm toast."
Yeah, you are. Because the police are going to find the 400 videotapes you also have in the basement.
Oh, yeah. You don't even know it's in the basement that they're going to find. I haven't gotten there yet. He was then arrested. Officers had to put on hazmat suits.
Oh, man.
To search the basement. The basement was described by officers as something out of a horror show. It smelled like death mixed with air freshener.
Oh.
Which sounds
disgusting.
Very unpleasant. The walls and ceiling were stained with blood. There was fecal matter, urine, and blood, and vomit on the carpet. As they searched the basement, they removed some of the paneling from the wall because they had to remove anything that had blood stains on it. So they ended up taking a whole bunch of the wall. And when they did, they found a secret hidden spot.
Oh.
Inside that area, it contained what investigators called a kill kit. It was a backpack with handcuffs, chains, leg irons, padlocks, duct tape, rope, and a stun gun. There was also a hand-drawn blueprint of two prison cells that Travis planned on building in his basement. And another piece of paper found, Toby described how he would abduct and hold women in the basement. He detailed his fantasies about feeding them, using different restraining options, and his desire to make them wear diapers.
Oh, Jesus.
There were addresses for different websites that all discussed extreme bondage. And there was a book called, are you ready for this? This is a book I never want to read. The Research Guide to Bodily Fluids. Why would you ever?
Why would you write that?
Why do you want to read that?
Who is reading this?
Toby was.
And who else?
I don't know if you can get it on Amazon.com because I Googled it to see what it was about. It's available.
The Research Guide to Bodily Fluids. Oh, my God.
Toby also kept a letter written to him by his mom in that area. In the letter, she expresses her hope that the anger management classes he was attending were helping him. Don't think it's working, Mom.
No.
And she hopes he prays to God for help and starts attending church. The letter was written by her in response to an incident that had occurred after Toby was released from jail in March, only a few months earlier. A woman was seen by Toby's neighbors screaming for help, running outside of his house and bleeding from her head. Toby was grabbing at her and he ripped her clothes off in his yard. But she was able to get away from him. She ran to a neighbor's house and the police were called. He was arrested, but the woman refused to cooperate with the police and Toby got released. Toby told his mom that the woman had tried to rob him, so he hit her over the head and she took off screaming. So anyway, that's the point of what her letter was about, is apparently when she found out about the incident, she suggested he get anger management classes and find God. I don't think he did either one.
Good guess.
Also found in that hidden area, as you probably already know, was a box with videotapes. One of the tapes was titled The Wedding Tape. And it starts out with a bride and groom walking down the aisle, but then it takes a very dark turn.
I'm going to tell you, Tony, see what I do.
Now you sit your ass down like I said. Get it higher.
Take that tape off again and see what happens.
It shows the murder of Cassandra, Alicia, Teresa, Betty, Brenda, and the Jane Does. One of the Jane Does was made to kneel naked in the video. Leg irons were put on her, and she was next to a basement support beam. The leg irons were wrapped around the support beam, so her back was towards it. And then her hands were put behind her back around the support beam and handcuffed, and she was forced to stay in that position. To this day, that woman, her identity is unknown. While watching the tapes, one of the police officers recognized a victim in it as a woman named Kelly Johnson. She'd been reported missing a year earlier by her boyfriend, and together her and her boyfriend had two small children. Kelly, like all the other women, struggled with addiction. She would go to rehab, get clean, and then start using again. Before she disappeared, she hit rock bottom, Literally nothing else mattered to her but getting high. Not her children, not her health. It was only through DNA that it was determined that Kelly Johnson was skeletal remains number 4. And that was the body found by the X on the map. By the time they finished searching Toby's house and car, they found not only everything I described, but they also found 2 whips, a lotion bottle with blood on it, condoms, fake fingernails, a wig, a bag filled with women's shoes, a bottle of Viagra, and rolls of undeveloped film. I don't want to know what's on that film. I'm sure it's been developed by now.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a horror show.
Meanwhile, as Toby is in the back of the cop car headed towards the station, he tells the police, let's not go to the police station. Let's go to East St. Louis so I can give you what I know you want, aka more bodies. As they approach the East St. Louis exit, he changed his mind and told him, forget it, just take me to jail. During the car ride, this piece of shit kept bitching about his computer and whining to the officers, how am I ever going to explain this to my mom? Over and over again.
Really? If you were so worried about what your mom thought.
Maybe you shouldn't do it.
Maybe you shouldn't do it. And videotape it.
At the jailhouse, while in custody, Toby began talking to authorities, sort of. Oddly, he told the police that he once tried to live his life as a homosexual man for a few months, but he decided he didn't like having sex with men, so he went back to women.
Well, that's something I've never heard of.
I know. And why is he telling the police
right,
that?
Like, why is that relevant to anything?
I don't know. They tried to convince him to give up the location of more victims. You know, they were saying things like, you could bring closure to their family. And you want to know what he said?
Fuck them families.
Whoa, you are so good. He said, quote, fuck them.
Did he really?
I don't know nothing about no damn missing house.
Wow.
The police gave him pop, and then they later retrieved the can to get DNA sample from it. Of course, that DNA matched survivor Barbara, Yvonne Cruz, and Brenda Beasley. In addition, tire marks found on Alicia Greenwade and Betty James's bodies matched both of Toby's cars. He didn't really confess to police, but he did say, quote, it's not my fault, man. I'm sick. I can't help it, end quote. That's as close as he got to a confession.
Excuse me while I roll my eyes. That's all you got to tell your mom, then. I'm sick.
Well, I'll get to what he tells his mom.
I can't wait.
Toby was processed and escorted to a Supermax cell on the 8th floor of the St. Louis County Justice Center, where he was placed on suicide watch. And that means someone, a guard, checks on him every 15 minutes. But 4 days after his arrest, the guard on suicide watch didn't check on Toby every 15 minutes. He actually waited 45 minutes. During that time, Toby made a makeshift noose from strips of his bedsheet. He attached it to the air vent above his toilet. He stuffed toilet paper in his nostrils, put a washcloth in his mouth. He placed a plastic cover that he had torn from his pillow over his head. He restrained his wrists behind his back with more strips from his bed sheet, which that would be very hard for me, but I'm assuming he's an expert at restraining people. Then he stood on top of the toilet. He stepped off the toilet, effectively strangling himself to death.
What a coward.
In his cell, he left a suicide note, and I'm going to read it. Quote, dear mom, I'm sorry for the pain this has caused you and the family. My death seems to be the only way out and a fast end to all this publicity. You are the best mother a man can have. I've been sick for a long time. Parentheses. Sick in the head, since I was 14 years old. I don't know why, I'm just sick. I've never felt normal or happy any time in my life. I think about the life I've led and what's ahead of me. It seems to be the best solution for all involved, especially me, because I won't spend the rest of my life locked up or worse, let them kill me with a needle. Tell Grandma, Marina, James, and everybody I love them dearly. I love you most, but you know that. Forever your son, Toby Travis. End quote. But he wasn't done. He left a second note. It says, to whom it may concern, please give this to my mother. P.S. It is also proof that you guys didn't kill me. Unquote.
Like that matters.
He's thinking of the officers.
Sure.
To this day, there are at least 3 unidentified victims of Toby. You can go to our website to see the sketches of these women. The police don't know exactly how many women Toby killed, but they estimate it's around 20. We'll never know the truth, obviously. You're just gonna get all fired up when I tell you this. Toby's mother, Sandra Travis Harden, she sued the county, the guard on suicide watch, and just about anybody and everybody else for Toby's death. However, she lost in summary judgment, and she never got a penny.
Oh, good.
Years later, a woman named Katrina, she signed a lease to live at 1001 Ford Drive in Ferguson, Missouri. One night, she was watching a documentary on serial killers when she noticed the house on the show looked just like the one she lived in. Even the inside of the house. The house was, in fact, Toby's mom's house. And Toby's mom was kind enough to leave some of Toby's furniture from the upstairs there for Katrina to use.
Oh, my God.
Katrina freaked out and demanded she be able to break the lease. But you know what Toby's mom said?
Nope.
Nope. Nope. You signed it. Eventually, St. Louis housing authorities stepped in and forced Toby's mom, Sandra, to allow Katrina to break the lease.
Yeah, don't you have to disclose those types of things
back
or before any of that, those laws were put into place?
Yeah.
Because that's some bullshit. How freaked out would you have been?
Oh, my God.
Boy, that looks like what? And the furniture?
And the going in the basement?
Oh, man.
So I had to give a credit where credit is due. I got a lot of the information from the Bi-State Strangler book by Ken Dye, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, ABC News, unidentified, wikia.org. And that's it.
Man.
Doesn't his voice creep you out?
Like, yes.
It just creeps me the hell out.
Like, I wonder what happened to him when he was 14. It caused him to be this way. Like, he's saying his mom is a great mom and he has a good family, it sounds like. It sounds like, I mean, he could have turned out to be a decent person.
Yeah.
Had a job and everything. I mean, I wonder what happened.
Maybe puberty. Maybe. I don't know. But I know at the age of 14, he started killing insects. And then he was accused of killing his neighbor's dog. And so his mom had to pay money to the neighbor to not press charges when he was like 15.
Oh, maybe that's how it started. Just got a little thrill out of it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
Maybe he saw The Collector.
Maybe. I want to thank everybody for taking your time to listen to our episode. If you haven't done so already, hit the follow/subscribe button and you'll get notifications on your app letting you know we have a new episode out. You can also see us on Instagram and Facebook by going to @HardcoreTrueCrime, where we post lots of other things. You can go to our website, TNT Crimes, and get pictures. And on this case's page, I have a link to the lawsuit filed by Toby's mom, if you want to read it.
Oh, I can't wait. Being a law nerd.
It's stupid. I mean, you should check it out. It's super interesting. And also on our website, there's a link to patreon.com/members. You can go and become a member. By becoming a member, you get ad-free episodes. And we also have over 50 full episodes not released to the public. We go live. And we swear a lot. I think that's it.
Yep, you covered it all.
I did. Getting good.
Yes.
Thank you guys again. Until next week when Tanya's going to have an amazing episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.